My name is Mark Madden. Joining me now, as always, he is the 16-time World Heavyweight Champion. And boy, we got a lot to go over today. So let's waste no more time and bring on the man. He is the Nature Boy, Ric Flair. Tell him, Nate.
Michael, how are you?
Well, not as bad as the Steelers, but...
Listen, by the way...
I'm hanging in there.
You can continue to call me the man because they still don't own it. I told you I'd let you know when they did.
Nate, as you know, I always adhere to all copyrights and trademarks. So, yes, you are, woo, the man.
To be, anyway. How are you guys?
Doing good, Nate. And I want to go current with the opening of the show because an old legendary opponent of yours hit a big number on the AEW show. AEW went over 1 million viewership, which they haven't done regularly in quite a while. And the main event was Sting, CM Punk, and Darby Allin against FTR and MJF. And you give the majority of the credit for that number to the Stinger, don't you?
I do. Yeah, well, the whole scenario was great. But, I mean, I can't help but poke fun at him because, you know, he's like, he really legitimately is what we call an icon. And he's... given so much to the business, and he was really actively participated in the match. He looked great. He did the dive off the top rope onto the guys, and I mean, my hat's off to him, and I think it was great. And you know, it's kind of like every time they bring back Austin to Raw or something like that. It's they're going to get a number just because of who the main event guy is. And I mean, the match was good, and the guys fed Sting. I mean, it was. He couldn't have asked for a better scenario.
And no question.
I'm happy for him. And then Punk paying tribute to him was awesome, too. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, Punk with the face paint, Sting with the Punk face paint.
Yeah.
I think we got to give Punk some credit for the rating, too, and just really everybody involved, MJF especially.
I'm not taking anybody out of the equation. I'm always, you know, rooting for the old guy. But... No, they all did a great job. You kidding? There was the components. Everybody worked together. Nobody seemed to be upset with anybody else's momentum. They shared it. They passed it on. And the guys, the tag team, you like said, well, those guys fed everybody. They it just was a perfect blend of chemistry and the emotion was high. Greensboro is a great wrestling town. As hard as WCW tried to kill it, it's still there, and they'll always remember Sting. And we had that classic class of champions match there years ago. So I'm really happy for him, and I'm happy for AEW. I'm happy for Punk and everybody else involved, MJF, all those guys.
Well, I do give FTR a lot of credit, Dax and Cash, because they are an ideal tag team for making opponents. They are old school in every way.
They just
feed perfectly.
They look like the horseman feeding Dusty.
Well, I'm sure they could think of no higher compliment. That's high praise, especially from you.
God's honest truth. They look like the horseman feeding Dusty, and that's the one thing that I think is great. And also, it was a long match. Once again, 30 minutes, but they never stopped. No one slowed down. Nobody got tired. If they did. You certainly didn't see it in their work rate. Everybody performed at a very high level. Those are the kind of things that make me proud to be a wrestler, watching stuff like that.
I'm going to disagree with one thing. I think AEW has too many matches that are too long. And certainly as a former wrestler, Nate, I know you have great respect for the guys who have the cardio and the pacing to do a long match like that. I don't know if it always holds the attention. I think it should be the exception rather than the rule, but it's becoming the rule on their TV show.
Well, you know, kind of as you alluded to last week, if it's getting a rating and our numbers are going up with these longer matches, you know, I'm not the one that can make that determination, but I'm just as a fan and overall observer of the product, I think it was great, and I'm happy for them, happy for Tony, and always happy when a younger guy that is a big star in his own right, meaning Punk. Gives a lot of praise to the Sting.
I'm not sure Punk's quite a younger guy anymore, but I get credit for guys like MJF and Darby Allin.
He's 20 years younger than Sting. No, it's serious. That's young. I mean, just Steve is 62 years old and out there rocking it, man.
No, he's great. Amazing. Yeah. He's amazing. No question that.
And Punk's a big star in the business. So for him to do that is a very unselfish thing. And it makes me think more of him every day. I don't know him very well, but things like that are what make people that have been in the business a long time like me take notice and pay attention and be very respectful of.
I just wonder if they're ever going to get to like 1.2 million, 1.5 million. I wonder what they have to do to grow that audience and bring in some different fans and maybe some casual fans.
Well, I don't know, Mark. I don't have the answer to that because I don't look at the demographic studies. I don't look at the 18 to 35.
They do real well in the 18 to 49, which bodes well for growth. It's just a matter of when it does pay off. And, you know, I hope it's sooner, not later.
Well, yeah, I'm sure they're not going anywhere, so it'll come. You know, like I told you, they need to get, now they need to stay above a million again. So for me, my competitive mind is, if they've hit it now and they hit it a couple of times and went back, now the key for them is to figure out how to stay above a million and go to the next level of 1.2 or wherever it is.
Right. I totally agree. If they can have a base of a million.
A sustained, yeah.
And sustain it, well put, they eventually will build on that.
Yeah.
And I think they have the talent to do it. Again, the only thing I question is how much they can get their stars on TV in 3 hours of TV time total in the week. They have 15 pounds of sugar for a 10-pound bag. And, you know, that's on Tony to make the best of it, to keep everybody happy. I don't think you can ever have too much talent until the talent thinks you have too much talent.
Yeah, but you just said something. They have 10 pounds of sugar, not 10 pounds of the other problem.
Well, that's true. That's absolutely right. They do have talent, and
there is another expression about that.
I was alluding to that.
The fact that you're calling it sugar, which I am too, is not a problem.
Oh, no, nobody would ever question the talent on their roster, I don't think. But the philosophy of rotating guys off TV, I don't think anybody ever became a star being rotated off TV. I don't think you can do that indefinitely and not have certain guys suffer for it.
I don't know. I'm not booking it. I'm just watching it, and I don't have, no one's going to criticize me for anything except tell them what I think, which I'm entitled to say.
Unlike no question, but
unlike a lot of other people that have podcasts.
But Nate, you never got rotated off TV, did you?
No.
Well, there you go.
But I was always in a championship picture. The champion's always got to be on TV.
Well, let's move on to our friends and foes segment because the foe is one of your most legendary of all time. In fact, he participated in what is my favorite Ric Flair feud, right up there with the Steamboat feud. In fact, it was in the same year, and that was the legendary Terry Funk. Now, everybody remembers you and Terry in 1989, but when Terry's family ran the Amarillo territory, how often did you work that territory, and what's your memories of that?
I only worked it once or twice as the NWA champion. It was kind of, Dory Sr. passed away. I never did get to meet their dad. But as you know, Junior came over to book Florida when I was a world champion. Terry was the world champion. You know, once they started to disband a little bit and without a territory in place, meaning Terry, Dory was, you know, they both were big stars in Japan going back and forth. Then Junior came over to book Florida, where he still lives now in Ocala. Terry was the world champion. So it's pretty hard to run a territory when the two guys that run it are on the road are gone. So it kind of disbanded, but I can't tell you that I wasn't there. Next to Kansas City, it was the worst territory in the country.
Really? Now, why is that?
I don't know. Wrestling for an hour in the Hereford barn.
Was it really a barn?
It was a 3,000 seat rodeo arena with a dirt floor.
Wow.
Obviously Amarillo was fun. Lubbock was fun. That whole part of the country, but you know, I'm not a fan of West Texas. I love Dallas. I love San Antonio and Austin. I love Houston, but West Texas they can have.
Well, I'm not a fan.
If they gave me the King Ranch, I wouldn't take it.
I'm not a fan of dirt floors, so maybe that. Maybe that. I'm not a fan of dirt floors, so maybe that. That speaks for itself.
I've wrestled on a few of those. We were walking through the mud to get to the ring.
Now, when the feud with Terry kicked off in 1989, it was right after you beat Steamboat for the title at WrestleWar, and Terry was at ringside to be a judge.
Yes.
In case it went to a draw, it was him and a Penthouse Pet, I believe, who gave you the decision, and Jason Hervey, I think.
Yeah.
That is quite a distinguished panel of wrestling experts there. And then Terry came into the ring. And honestly, until the moment he stepped into the ring, I never dreamed he was going to get involved. I think there was a legitimate element of surprise that existed when he came in and it got physical.
Oh, absolutely. Nobody knew it. And I didn't know what he was going to do either. By the way, he almost broke my neck here. This is what started hardcore wrestling, ladies and gentlemen. For those of you that don't know it, you can ask the Dudleys, you can ask Tommy Dreamer. This move where the table did not break and he almost broke my neck is what is it's how hardcore wrestling evolved.
Now, I was going to ask you about
that. He didn't even tell me. He said, follow me, Rick, follow me. I said, follow you where? I mean, you know, because you know Terry, right? I don't even think he knew what he was going to do until we were out there.
Well, it was a pile driver onto a table.
Yeah.
And I'm assuming the table wasn't at all gimmicked. It didn't break. In fact, you could see your head and neck bounce off it, which actually added to the injury angle. But so you had no idea you were going to be pile driven on the table.
Absolutely none. I would have never gone for it had I known. Funk is crazy. You don't understand this. I've wrestled a lot of crazy guys, Brody, Hanson, to nobody's crazier than Terry Funk. And Terry Funk was really tough too. So, he didn't mind taking it. I hit Terry Funk harder than I've ever hit anybody in my life when I was chopping him, as you've seen. I mean, you know, Terry and I have had some really good exchanges. It's a different time in life, and I can't, you know, I talk to Terry now probably once a week. He's finally back home. He's been in bad health, but he came back out of it. He got out of the facility he was in that was helping him get back on his feet. He's home, and God, he's tougher than, you know, he's like Harley Race, one of those guys that's too tough to die. And so I'm just thankful that I ever had the opportunity to wrestle with him. I've got some Terry Funk stories that I can't even tell on the podcast, even though it's uncensored, I can't tell them.
I've got some Terry Funk stories I can't tell on the podcast too. So we both
he's the greatest.
Oh, one of my favorite wrestlers and favorite men ever. Just was always a pleasure to deal with for me and taught me so much about the business.
Should I just tell you one Terry Funk story, right? So we're at Raleigh TV, and Greg Valentine, myself, we're bringing Terry back from Raleigh TV to Charlotte. And we were drinking that Foster's Lager beer, right? And we bought a bottle of grain alcohol. And we were pouring it, you know, just be like we're crazy in the old days. And we came to a stop on Monroe Road in Charlotte. And Terry got out of the car naked with the world championship belt on him. And this is like, now this is 76, 77, maybe in 77 or 8. And he's actually like directing traffic. There was no cars, but he pretended like he was. It's 2 in the morning. So from there, and all the way home, he kept lighting Greg Valentine's hair on fire in the car. So we get to my house, and I had a pit bull then that jumped over the fence, came over the fence and jumped and bit Terry and bit him right through his nose. I mean, a bad bite.
Through his nose?
Yeah, bit through his nose. He jumped on top of Terry.
Well, shit, no wonder he piled drove you through the table.
No, this is later on, yeah. So he's the world champion. So we go inside, and my wife is out for the evening, and I paid the babysitter to go in Megan's room. She was a little baby at that time, and just staying there. And Terry came in the house, and he took a knife out of the canister that holds knives, and put it between his teeth like he was a pirate and crawled around my backyard trying to catch that dog. Well, I had gotten sick, which I never do, and my wife came home with one of her friends and opened the door and said, well, this is my husband, I'm embarrassed to say, and let me see. Oh, yeah, and that's Terry Funk, the world champion, out in our backyard. She took all my clothes, not my first experience, took all my clothes, threw them out in the front yard of the house, 3 o'clock in the morning, and the next thing I knew, I had a silver Eldorado, and the next thing I knew, I woke up at the Downtowner in Charlotte, which is sad to say, I don't remember how I got there, and Funk was already gone to another city, and I had to figure out a way to get back into my house, so it was never a dull moment in the 70s with Nature Boy and Terry Funk together.
Well, that angle at WrestleWar turned you babyface, but you were kind of a babyface already, I thought. I mean, the fans had kind of pushed you in that direction despite you not liking it.
I didn't mind it because with Terry, I didn't have to worry about not being able to do anything offensively except hit him. You know what I mean? So our matches weren't around drop kicks, leapfrogs, you know, moonsaults and everything. It was just a war. I mean, it really was. I would hit him as hard as I possibly could.
Well, we're going to talk about Steamboat at a later date, but when he was the family man in your feud, you know, with his wife and kids, yes, and you were the playboy with all the models, everything was for you. I mean, how could they not see that was the fans were going to decide who had all the girls?
Well, that's one of the things that, you know, I've talked about with Ricky. I don't think Ricky had a choice. I think Bonnie kind of pushed that on him, which I've said, you know, not the first time I've ever made the comment. You know, Bonnie wanted to be Miss Elizabeth more than Miss Elizabeth wanted to be Miss Elizabeth. So that's kind of an untold story. I put it in my book because I feel like she cost him, you know, $10 million. Which I've said publicly, but she guided his career, and he, you know, Rick is such a good guy. I don't know whatever went on behind the scenes, but I think Rick would have preferred to, not that he didn't like being with his son, it had nothing to do with his son, but I don't think he liked being portrayed, being that much under thumb, if that makes sense.
Now, You were off almost 3 months to sell the injury to Terry. That's a long time for you. What was that? What did you do with yourself?
I don't think I was off. I think I was downtown Atlanta. I mean, I was working a little bit, but I was staying in Atlanta. And whatever work I was doing then, I don't know. Just, you know me, Mark, I can find something to do anywhere.
Right, but you weren't on TV. You weren't on, you know, it was a different time for you.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, you're talking about 89.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. It was hard. I love being on TV, but I understood the importance of what we thought we had, and ultimately it worked out great with the Clash of Champions and all that. And then we did the other thing with in Philadelphia. Wow, that thing with Sting and I. I mean, it evolved into a hell of an angle, and it drew a lot of money.
No question. The first match was at the Great American Bash in Baltimore against Terry. That was your comeback match. And boy, I remember the crowd went crazy. It was obviously more of a brawl than a match, which made sense given the angle. But boy, it had a lot of intensity.
Yeah, it did. That's who Terry and I were. He thrived on being the best at what he did, as did I. And I, you know, as I tell everybody today, if you don't want to be the best, you're not going to be the best. And so you take what you have, and as I've said, the babyface role I didn't like because I didn't have a lot of offensive tools, the chop, the woo, you know, I could sell real good for guys that would stay on me. But with Terry, it was just a war, and it was a fight, and it was real, and if anybody doesn't think that it was real, you should have been in there with us. You can see he's hit me right in the windpipe right there. Yeah, that was by design.
America starts the day with America in the Morning.
First of three pushes of storminess.
Hi, I'm John Trout, your host for the latest news, politics, entertainment, business, and weather.
A speech with political overtones.
Our staff of correspondents provide a fast-paced look at the world with specialized reports from where news happens.
The judge's decision was based on finding there is a likelihood.
So far, the central bank appears to be threading that.
Concise, accurate, and fresh each day.
America in the Morning, the podcast, available wherever you listen.
Well, at one point, as part of an angle, he put a plastic bag over your head to suffocate you.
We almost lost TBS.
I know. That was kids. Don't try this at home. What do you remember about that? Whose idea was that?
It was ad lib Terry Funk. I didn't even know it was coming.
Really?
Really.
Because there was a lot of heat. There was a lot of heat behind the scenes for that, wasn't there?
Oh, my God. We almost lost TV.
Well, what was said? Who said what? Where did the heat come from?
Jim Barnett, my God, what have you done? I mean, it's kind of like the time Brody, not meaning to by any means, we're at TV in Atlanta. Brody was storming around and he kicked a kid's wheelchair.
Ooh.
And the kid didn't fall the wheelchair or anything, but he just rolled it into the crowd. I mean, like, then, you know, and not an attempt to, by any means, hurt the kid, but that's just how crazy we got back in those days. We didn't think out of the box, the big picture. We just were focusing on trying to draw money and entertainment. And, you know, we probably could have been a little more conservative in our thought process, but we weren't.
No. I say bring back the plastic bag. That was entertainment.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, considering I couldn't almost get it off my, you know, you don't understand what Terry, doesn't work. It's a shoot. When he put that bag on me, it was a fight to get it off. You have no idea. Not that he was trying to. I don't know for sure. He may have been trying to.
Yeah, he might have been trying to kill you. Please.
Well, pass out for sure.
Now, the
that
best
look good. What's that?
The best match between you guys, and one of my favorite matches ever. Not a 5-star classic, but so much heat, so much intensity, so much meaning. With the result was you and him Clash of the Champions November. Mm. I quit. Mm. What do you remember about that match? Because that's one of the few matches, Nate, for you or for anybody, I watch over and over. It was so good.
Yeah, like you say, it was by no means a classic, but it's the kind of match that would draw money today.
Yeah, it meant something. It meant something. The result meant something.
Well, it was so solid, and it meant something, yeah. Even though there was none of the stuff that is required, not required today, but a part of what the business is all about, you know, diving off the ropes and moonsaults and high spots. It was just a war, but it was believable. And it's the kind of match that would draw money today. Terry had a hell of an interview too.
Oh my God. He's one of the best promos of all time. Yeah, that interview we did where he dragged out, who was the poor guy? Ron Ames. Remember the guy he dragged out with the flare robe and the yellow streak down his back and the blonde wig? That was tremendous.
Yeah. He's a great guy. One of a kind.
Harley Jim Ross says, wait a minute, that's not Ric Flair. And Terry goes, why, sure it is. Can't you see the yellow streak down his back, JR?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, one thing about that I Quit match, and I think it was the first time it had been done, because there had been I Quit matches before, like Magnum and Tully, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But you guys got the microphone involved.
Yeah.
You were shoving the mic in each other's faces. Terry's like, Ric Flair, you yellow dog, quit. I mean, that was a nice touch, and I think it made it even more emotional. It was like cutting promos in the middle of the match.
Yeah, exactly. It was just... you know, we just had chemistry. I don't know whether Terry just initiated that. I think he just decided by himself during the body of the match to grab the microphone and start doing it. Because I don't remember us discussing that beforehand, but it worked out. Of course, he denies to this day he quit.
No, I can say the line, Rick. My God, my leg is breaking. All right, damn it, I quit.
Yeah.
Like it was yesterday. It was tremendous.
He denies it.
And not only that, that's the last time you beat anybody with the figure four.
Absolutely. I must have been holding the rope.
Now, WCW took Terry out of the ring following that match. He didn't wrestle anymore. They gave him like a talk show segment, Funk's Grill. That surprised me. I thought Terry still had a lot left in the tank, and he certainly proved that in the years to come.
Oh, I do too. That was the management decision. Who knows? Terry was pretty good at commentary, as you know.
Yeah, real good.
Yeah, he did. He could have done anything he wanted to do, but I'm not sure why. Then they put him with Bunkhouse Buck, you know, for a while, and I'd have to go back and talk to a guy like Cornette or Kevin Sullivan that was there. But it was a lot of fun while we were doing it, and every time I see Terry, I mean, you talk about one of the greats of the business. I mean, you know, he's one of those guys, when he walks into a building, every wrestler from either company ought to kiss his ass. He's given so much and worked so hard for this business.
Well, like I always tell people, 1989 was easily my favorite year. When people say, what year of wrestling did you enjoy most? No question. 1989, Flair Steamboat, Flair Funk.
Thank you very much.
No question.
I can't say it wasn't great. It was great for me, too, as well.
Now, I mean,
To be able to wrestle two of the greatest of all time over a 12-month period and have multiple matches and return matches, and not to mention the arena shows that we did with each other. It was a special time in life for me, as it was for both of them. And I remain extremely close to both of them. Those are the kind of friendships that never go away. If for no other reason, just respect for each other.
In a nutshell, Nate, what made Terry Funk great? If I had to pick two words, it was charisma and legitimacy.
Those would be the same two words I would use. Very charismatic, unpredictable, and an incredibly committed work ethic. He would do anything to get the match over. Yeah.
Is Terry one of the top five ever?
Well, you just got to, because I'd have to think about it when you have to.
It's so tough to compare across eras.
He's one of the top 10.
Yeah, and I think he's one of the top two or three from his era, from his prime.
Oh, from his era, absolutely. Yeah, pretty soon they're going to have to, and you and I'll put some thought into this. There have been so many great workers from the past that nobody even knows about or remembers. But, you know, except someone my age has wrestled all these guys, you're going to have to start defining the greatest by eras. Does that make sense?
Within
a time frame, or whoever, or by contributions that have inspired other people. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that applies to the mainstream sports too, because how can you compare what Babe Ruth did in 1927 to what Barry Bonds did in 1998? It's just the games, it's a totally different game. And I think the same applies to wrestling too.
Yeah, but the problem is wrestling does that more often. Wrestling's always, you got people that have no idea, know nothing about wrestling other than just an opinion, right? Which anybody can have, but somehow the internet, gives an opinion and they make judgments. They don't even know what they're talking about. And I because I'm forced to, as we've discussed, to look at social media now, it's insane. Wrestling, there's so many people they think are great wrestlers that don't have a fundamental clue, but they've been in some really good matches. Does that make sense?
Oh, for sure it is. Yeah.
That's a whole other podcast. But in this case, Terry Funk, like Harley Race, great, and will be one of the top 10 guys forever, no matter what generation.
Well, Twitter and social media has also made this the era of self-congratulations. For example,
God, no shit. Self-congratulations. Yay.
AEW is a great promotion. You know how I know that, Rick? Because every single person on their roster tells me that every chance they get. Look, I'm sold. I mean, just go out and do the business and entertain me. But the more you tell me how great you are, the more I look for cracks.
Yeah, well, I can't knock that because I told myself how great I was and the audience.
Yeah, but you were great. You were great. You got people on Twitter telling me how great they are. They can't even get on TV to save their lives.
Oh, I know that. That's what I said. That's what's wrong with the business. And people read it. And they actually made comments on it rather than going, this is bullshit. Bullshit, 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 right?
No, there is one guy who says it's bullshit, and that's why I'm not the most popular person in
Well, no, but I'm saying it.
That, right.
Yeah, now I don't care whether people are like this comment or not. There's the word great, and I emphasize this every show and will continue to, is a whole different discussion than being good. Entirely different discussion. Great and good. Very good. But great, come on, there's only a few of us.
Well, Nate, it's time for us to talk a little fantasy sports and a little sports gambling too. And I'm excited to tell everybody out there about our new sponsor, Bonnie Sports. Now, if you're like me and you love picking who's going to win each game, and I'm real good at it too, Bonnie Sports is the perfect place to do it. Bonnie Sports is the easiest daily fantasy sports platform I've come across where you just pick the teams you think will win each game and play against other fans for up to thousands of dollars in prizes. It's as simple as that. Tell them, Nate.
Woo! BonnieSports.com. Use promo code Woo Nation.
Well, if you do that, you receive a free $5 to enter any contest, including this week's $1,400 NFL Sunday contest. No deposit or payment info necessary. You literally get a free $5 credit just for signing up with our code. They got daily MLB, NBA, NHL, NCAA football and basketball, golf, MMA, you name it, they got it. Nate, we got week 17 coming up next week for the NFL. And honestly, here in Pittsburgh, we're starting to lose interest after that debacle at Kansas City yesterday. But here's the game I got. I'm going to stick close to home. Pittsburgh was a 1.5-point favorite at home against Cleveland. After getting killed at Kansas City, they're a 3-point underdog at home. And I got to tell you, I'm taking Cleveland, giving Pittsburgh the points, even at Heinz Field, even here in Pittsburgh. Cleveland can run the ball. Pittsburgh can't stop it.
Yeah, even after Baker throwing four interceptions, it's hard to believe they're picking Cleveland. But, you know, who knows? I'm a big fan of football, and I understand. I'm certainly not going to sit here like Ryan Clark.
Ryan Clark's brilliant. You don't like him?
No, I like him, but it's 1 week they're tearing Aaron Rodgers up because of COVID. 1 week they're tearing him up because he didn't report to camp. The next week he's their hero. Be consistent. That's all I'm asking. Well, I like Ryan Clark as an athlete.
Oh, Nate.
Between he and Stephen A., they flip back and forth. I mean, Stephen A. will always call Aaron Rodgers the bad man. But, man, when he had the COVID thing, you know, which is none of their damn business. Their personal health issues are, but that's none of their damn business. I like Orlovsky, yeah, and I like Jeff Saturday. No, they stay consistent with their thought process. Rex Ryan, consistent. Randy Moss, consistent. But to get on TV every day, I'm glad that we shoot this now so I don't have to watch any more First Take. It's the truth.
Just go to bodysports.com on your laptop or download their 4.9 star rated app on the App Store. Remember to use the code WOONATION, that's W-O-O Nation, when signing up for a free $5. No strings attached. That's Bonnie Sports, and good luck to all. Now, Nate, we want to talk now about one of your friends, and that is Tully Blanchard.
Yes.
A founding member of the Four Horsemen. We both have great regard for him. Tully is 67 and still involved. He's a manager in AEW. He still bumps once in a while, God bless him. And he even wrestled a match not too long ago.
Yeah, and he's still very fit.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Okay. You know, a lot of people don't realize what a great athlete Tully Blanchard is.
Oh, a small college quarterback. I believe he made all conference.
Well,
he was awesome.
He switched. But Tully had the high school record when he graduated from high school for the longest punt in the nation.
How long was it?
I don't know. Like, you could Google it, but I'm sure it's been broken by them. But I mean, he was one of the most highly touted, the quarterback, Tommy Kramer, that went to the Vikings. Remember him?
Yeah, for sure.
He and Tully were the two highest rated quarterbacks in the state of Texas.
Well,
Tully's a legit athlete, damn good.
Well, let's stick with that, because what got Tully over? Because he wasn't a big man. He was like 5'10", 5'11", but I think his legitimate athleticism really stood out in a wrestling ring.
That and here. He was a technician. He was smart. he came across exactly what he is, like an arrogant prick. He'll laugh when he hears this. No, I love him. Hey, Blanchard and I had a lot of fun. Blanchard and I and Arn and Barry and God, unscripted, man. We had the greatest times and the greatest relationship. And, you know, to me, I mean, I see some of the stuff that goes on with the Hall of Fame. How Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson aren't in the Hall of Fame as singles is beyond my imaginary scope. When I see some of the guys they put in the Hall of Fame, give me a break. Tully and Arn, who both wrestled a lot of single matches before their tag teams and as tag teams, both are Hall of Fame guys all day long. And it's, I'm not going to get into the list of people they put in ahead of them and why and how and the politics, but man, those two guys, and like I said, as Barry, another guy, come on, give us a break. How many guys in a single match could do what Barry has done? Not just with me, but you know what I mean?
No doubt. Now, one thing I liked about the TBS Saturday show, which used to be the flagship of the promotion, and I thought it really benefited Tully, it was almost all squash matches. Now, some people might think squash matches are boring, but I thought it enabled Tully, and a lot of guys, but Tully in particular, to get all his stuff in, all his moves, all his athleticism, and it made you want to pay to see him in a real match. I think the squash match is something that's been underestimated and the value's been lost now that nobody does them, except rarely.
Well, I'm not a big fan of squash matches, but, you know, there was a time when there just wasn't enough talent, be honest with you, enough talent to put on a good long TV match all the time, especially when you're making as much TV as we were making, not only TBS, but the network TV we were making in Raleigh as well.
Right, the syndicated.
Syndicated as well. So, you know, I'd rather just, but I used to tell George Scott all the time, why don't you just let me talk? Why would I wrestle Klondike Bill for 3 minutes, right? I just make myself look bad and Bill look worse.
Well, and Tully did great angles, too. One of my favorite angles was when he brought in Baby Doll. He teased it for weeks, the perfect 10.
And
I thought it was great because when she got there, I mean, Nikla certainly was very attractive, but she wasn't a perfect 10 in like the Elizabeth type of mold, and she was taller than Tully. She almost towered over him when she wore heels, and that was an example of the heel being oblivious, which I think a good heel needs to be.
Yeah, no, it was great, though. I'd already... She was called herself Nicola, her real name is Nicola Roberts. Her dad was a famous promoter, but can't think of his name. But anyway, she was Gino Hernandez's manager first when I wrestled Gino out in the Texas territory.
Well, at one point she was Andrea the Lady Giant as a wrestler.
Yeah.
So,
she was great in the role, and you know, she came along at the right time. She put up with all our shit, and she had fun with this.
No, I've met her many times. She's an awesome lady, and like I said, I love the perfect 10 angle with Tully.
I heard her on a podcast when she said Ric Flair would drink a lot.
Wow, that's breaking news. Somebody call the New York Times.
No, I love Nicola. When I see her, we're always very friendly, very cordial. Anybody that ran with us back in those days, man, deserves a medal of honor. Hell, we had a limo driver dying us in Chicago the day after we left town.
I almost died a couple times after you guys left town, too. So that wasn't exactly a unique club. Now, Tully was already over before his feud with Magnum TA, but I thought that feud put Tully over the top, and I thought that I Quit match was just legendary.
Oh, phenomenal. I mean, you look at the body of work that some of these guys have put in. I mean, I just spoke with Terry over the Christmas holidays, and that such a terrible, terrible accident to be in. All he was just getting rolling. Speaking of a guy that was going to be the NWA champion, I think he had a good shot at it too.
Yep.
We were talking about DiBiase last week, but Terry Allen was right there in line, and Terry was fun to work with. Had a great attitude, and boy, he paid the price to get into business too. He came down to train in Charlotte with Buzz Sawyer and Nashik was there, Khosrow was there. They and Gene Anderson, they beat the shit out of Magnum. I think he almost quit twice, and he had actually wrestled at Old Dominion, so he was a pretty good amateur wrestler. But when you're breaking in the business back in those days, man, we didn't care if a guy could sit out or do the Granby roll. You wanted to get in the business, you got the shit beat out of you.
Well, this is no knock on any of the other members, but when I look back at the history of the Four Horsemen,
yeah,
I think the person who most embodied the look and the lifestyle was Ric Flair, and I think number two was Tully Blanchard. I really do. I think as a Horseman founding member and the way he talked and the way he acted, the way he dressed, the way he lived, yeah, I think he's number two behind Ric Flair.
I would agree that he was great. I don't want to like put the guys in order of greatness.
Oh, no. I'm not saying in order of greatness. I'm saying in order of having a night on the town, looking the part, dressing the part.
Oh, certainly. Absolutely. He loved nice clothes, too. I thought he meant, you know, I Tully had no problem. To this day, I get a note from Lynn Congers. I want you to keep this in here, Steve, so I can send this to him. Thanking me, because we've been buying clothes from Lynn first, 1981.
Now, where's that located, Nate? Where is he at?
Richards and Conjures. It was Michaels in Kansas City, as you guys know. I bragged about that.
Yeah.
Taylor, Richards, and Conjures. Now it's, I buy him something else, some other, this guy I'm buying clothes from now. It's so ridiculously expensive. It's insanity, but I got to be the Nate, man. I can't stop Nate. but Tully had no problem with Nate either. We had fun.
No doubt. Now, what made Arn and Tully such a great time?
Let me tell you a great story for the people that understand how tough it used to be. So Gene Anderson ran the office when Crockett had the big office they bought out on Carmel Road, and they had a ring in it and all that. So a guy came to break in one day with his kid, right? And Gene said, the kid had a mask on. And so Gene says, okay, what do you want to do? So my son wants to be a wrestler. What does that mean? Tell him to take off the mask. The kid wouldn't take the mask off. So Gene goes, well, you can't be a wrestler if I can't see your face. He said, no, I don't want anybody to know who I am because I'm going to be so good. So they took him back in the back. You can only imagine. I mean, tell me. You're going to tell Gene Anderson, you're a 22-year-old kid, you're not going to take the mask off, but you want to be a wrestler.
It was
Probert and McSorley at their best.
except
it was just Probert against this guy.
I was going to say it was Probert in a squash match like we were talking about before.
Wow.
That is a bit more accurate.
I will not take off the mask because I'm going to be so great I want no one to know who I am.
Now, what made Arn and Tully so great as a tag team? Because some would say, and I might agree, that they're the best tag team of all time. Because as you mentioned a moment ago, Nate, they were primarily singles guys before they got together, although Arn certainly worked with Ole for a time, too.
Mm-hmm. I think, like I said, it used to be Ray and Nick, but I think Tully and Arn are arguably the greatest tag team. And once again, going back to this Hall of Fame status, which I don't know how that works anymore, because they're not giving enough recognition to the guys that the word great would apply to. I thought they were the best tag team I'd ever seen. I mean, you know, I like the Usos now. I like the kids, FTR, but FTR, you know, they grew up idolizing Arn and Tully. They had a lot of influence. I mean, you could take the Midnight Express and all these great teams and, you know, but I don't think you're going to find a better team than, Tully and Arn, and they understood it. They were much better. They were much better together than me when I would sub for one of them. That makes sense. I was not a good tag team wrestler.
Well, yeah, because a lot of guys, Nate, Arn and Tully wrestle like a tag team.
Exactly.
That's the strength of like FTR, the Usos as well. Whereas sometimes you throw two guys together, it's just in a match four guys wrestling. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely.
There's not that continuity, cohesion, teamwork.
No.
It's not the same.
No, Tully and Arn fed, and we got together in eight man. It was just, there were times the crowd would be so loud for 20 minutes, there was no reason to even cut the baby face off. when we were wrestling Dusty, Sting, and the Road Warriors, those eight-man tags, it was insanity. We finally just, I don't know where, Iron with Spine Buster, one of them, which was very believable because the Spine Buster was so good, or catch one of them with a DDT, we'd get a little bit of heat, and then, boom, blow the roof off the joint for another 20 minutes.
Well, Tully got fired by WWE in 1989. He flunked a drug test. That's no secret. And he was going to go back to WCW, but he kind of disappeared from the big time after that. And he really still athletically and physically was in his prime. What happened there?
I don't know. You'd have to ask him that.
But it's odd even now to look back, isn't it? Because he was such a top guy.
Oh, yeah, it was for sure. I just think, you know, he got into ministry, and as a couple of the guys have, and... Look, Nikita took an early exit, too. And when I was in the office at WCW, I told, I can't remember whether it was Jim Hurd or Eric, I said, you know, if you bring this guy back and he puts the weight back on and he comes back as Nikita that I knew, he can draw you some money. But he just declined it and said, you know, appreciate the offer, but I don't want to... I don't want back in the business. Some people, they get to a plateau and when they walk away from it. I my problem is I never got to that plateau. I still like it.
Now,
but Tully's doing a hell of a job right now over at AEW.
Yeah, I wish they'd let him talk more.
Me too.
I wish they'd let a lot of guys talk more. But again, that's the 15 pounds of sugar thing.
Iron too.
Yep, no question. Now, did you ever wrestle Tully when he worked for his dad, Joe, in that Southwest territory? Because
I didn't wrestle. No, when I down there, I wrestled the kid that Shawn Michaels, the guy that broke in Shawn Michaels,
Jose Lothario.
I wrestled Lothario there, and I wrestled Wahoo there. But I knew Joe. I knew Tully's dad, Joe, very well. He used to say to me, you know what the first rule of fighting is, Rick? And I'd say, what? He said, never overmatch yourself. So, Tully and I and Joe had a lot of great times together. He was a great guy. And Tully was very close to his parents.
Now, the Four Horsemen were a force even after personnel changes. And again, this is no knock on anybody who succeeded them, but I felt like the group was never quite the same after Arn and Tully left. Do you agree?
Absolutely. Never the same.
At any point...
Not even close.
At any point, did you want to suggest, hey, let's just stop doing this? Did that ever come up? Or did you think there was still value in carrying it forward for the years to come?
I think it was a couple of times I wish... I mean, it was great. I have to be honest with you. In terms of fun, when it was Mongo, Benoit, and Dean Malenko, who was as technically gifted as anybody... Benoit, you know, I don't, regardless of how terrible the ending was to all that, Benoit could work his ass off, and Mongo was so damn much fun. And I see Steve, you know, on a regular basis now. He's battling ALS, as you know, but that was a fun unit as well. But it was, you know, we went not nearly the skill that they had, the skill Dean and Chris did. But at that point, it was, for me, I was just having fun. It wasn't the same. It's hard to follow something that was so great in life. You know, I could apply it to different things, but you remember the great ones.
Oh, no question. Like in my job here in Pittsburgh, you know, I've had the honor of covering and working with five Stanley Cup champions, mm-hmm. but it's never the same as the first two with Mario and Kevin Stevens.
Yeah.
And Paul Coffey, Mark Recchi, you know the names, Nation.
Sure, absolutely.
We've had some great players since then with Sidney Crosby, who's actually won more cups than Mario, 3-2. But you never forget where you came from and where the people you work with came from, too.
Exactly. I mean, the whole thing with Crocker Promotions was a whole different setup. Everybody enjoyed working when Turner... As good as it was, as much as it helped out Jimmy and David and Francis and Jackie to get out from the debt, with Turner, it just turned everything around. You know, when Jim Hurd came in, he might as well have, well, he virtually destroyed anything that we'd ever done in the NWA.
He might as well have thrown gasoline on it and lit a match.
He might as well just burn it down walking in the door.
Yeah, exactly. But part of it too, Nate, is we enjoy thinking about what happened back when because we were younger. That puts a better light on it, too.
And also because of YouTube and the WWE and that network. You can't get away from it. You know, which is fun. It's fun looking back on it.
Let's take a time out here. And while we normally have a lot of fun on this show, this is a pretty serious topic. Life insurance, specifically Goliath life insurance. Let me give you a pro tip. We're all going to die. So before you get a visit from the Undertaker, think just for a second about what would happen if your family stopped having your income tomorrow. With life insurance from GoliathLife.com, what we're really talking about is protecting what you've worked so hard to provide for both you and, more importantly, your family. You see, life insurance isn't about you. It's about those who matter the most to you. Sure, you do a great job taking care of them now, but who would do that if something awful happened to you? I just lost two friends in the last year and a half, one 42 with two kids, the other 46 who left behind a wife and three kids. Thank God they had insurance. And hey, I hear you. Nobody wants to think or talk about life insurance. But think about this. You might not get in a car accident, but you have auto insurance. You might not get sick, but you have health insurance. So we'll protect our car, and we'll even protect ourselves from like crazy medical bills. But will we protect our family? That's what life insurance means to me. Peace of mind. GoliathLife.com streamlines the life insurance purchase process by allowing you to get quotes from more than 20 carriers all at the same time and at the same place. GoliathLife.com. You'll do a fast and easy application and have multiple quotes within minutes. And oh, by the way, GoliathLife.com has solutions for every budget. And maybe best of all, you pick your terms and payments at GoliathLife.com. Once you pick your price, you can start the online application immediately. And check this out. You can even schedule the medical exam to happen in your home. You don't even have to leave the house to do this. And yes, I have done this. They sent someone to my office. It was fast. It was easy. And it was unlike anything I expected. I got to skip the phone calls, the paperwork, and the crazy invasive conversations, and even the multiple visits to the doctor's office that we all hate so much. GoliathLife.com makes buying life insurance simple. GoliathLife.com promises no hidden fees, no upsell, no hassle, hell, not even a phone call. GoliathLife.com is life insurance in your hands, on your time. Get multiple quick quotes right now from the comfort of your own home and begin your application in a few easy clicks right now at GoliathLife.com.
Now, before we look at some of today's stars, and that was great talk about Terry and Tully, two of my all-time favorites. I always enjoyed. I haven't seen Terry in a while, but I run into Tully now and again, and, you know, just a great guy. And you fall into the same old patterns of, you know, kidding around and stuff like that.
Yeah.
As you did. But I want to talk about a phenomenon in wrestling. I'm curious to hear your opinion to this. Are there too many champions in wrestling? And hear me out. In WWE, there are 16 different champions, not including the King and Queen of the Ring. In AEW, there are 6 champions, and that doesn't include the Owen Hart tournaments that are coming up. How much does having so many titles dilute any title, or doesn't it matter?
I think it does, because I think, I think it dilutes it. I absolutely do. But, you know, let's look at the world we live in today. You remember the president's fitness physical?
The president's physical fitness council. No, look at me. Obviously, I don't.
But do you remember that?
I remember it existed, yes. I did not participate.
To find out who was the most fit child in high school, right?
Right, exactly. It wasn't me.
No, but they got rid of it, right? Because everybody wants to be equal. Instead of being 3 places, now there's 8 places or 6 places in wrestling tournaments. I mean, it's everything is diluted because, you know, whether it's mothers not wanting to see their children upset, everybody gets a trophy. That's not what sports are all about. And I think because there's so much TV, that they have put themselves in a position where they have to create like the King and Queen and all that. But the people that are carrying the weight of the company, and I'll use WWE as an example, would be Becky and Big E, as they're the champions, and it's Ashley or Charlotte and Roman Reigns. And everything else is just something that doesn't diminish who they are, but it's just something to hopefully attract viewers.
Well, right. Like, and it says a lot that I don't even know who the Intercontinental Champion is right now. And that used to be a big deal back in the day when there were so many fewer belts. Mm-hmm. But whoever is the Intercontinental Champion.
You know, it's funny. I don't know who it is either.
Well, right. And it's
probably, I watch the shows.
It's probably a very good performer, but the belt doesn't help him and he doesn't help the belt. So why have it?
Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny. I feel bad that I don't, because I watch all the shows now. But I mean, they have TV rolls on, and they know better than you and I do, obviously, because they're there. Well, what it draws viewers and that, but I love that Zelina. I think she's been a very good talent. But you know, I don't buy that queen versus queen stuff at all.
No, nobody does.
No.
That's kind of the point. Like, I look at some of the titles, like, we can't remember who the Intercontinental Champion is, okay? Then you got the 24/7 champion in AEW.
Well, that to me, when when R-Truth is involved in that, that is good TV. If you got to put humor in TV, that Ronnie has put that, taking it to a whole new level. And the little Japanese kid that chases him around, I mean,
Tozawa.
Yeah, that has been. I have actually found that very entertaining at times.
Well, the fact
I had Ronnie beat me in a bar one night. I covered him, but they never put it on TV.
Well, the fact that you remember who's involved says something good about it. And like in an AEW, you got the
when that stuff that was very entertaining, and when they throw it in periodically, you know, I don't like it being a distraction in the middle of a real good match, which they've done before, just to get out of a finish. But Ronnie is a very talented kid. And man, but when he's got that 24/7 thing, I like that idea. If there's got to be entertainment, wrestling is good. And by the way, Ronnie's a hell of a wrestler too.
Now,
can work.
Another belt, the FTW belt, the F the World belt, which Taz had in ECW just to kind of proclaim himself as the company badass. And it worked for him. I thought it was great with him, but now he has Team Taz. He passed it along to his guys. Brian Cage lost it to Ricky Starks, but they were both his guys at the time. I don't get it. I just don't get the value of that at all.
Neither do I. Other than to be a conversation piece for you and I to discuss.
Yeah, I guess. But like I said, it worked for Taz. It was great for him, but some ideas aren't meant to last in perpetuity.
Taz is a unique character.
Oh, I like Taz.
I do too. He could pull off anything, but that doesn't mean that someone else can just take it and be the same character he was.
Now, Nate, before we wrap this segment up, what's the least prestigious title you ever had? Least prestigious.
Well, it must be the one that nobody will count as a world championship. The one that I took off Sting, but they don't count it as a win.
Which one was that? When was that?
When I took it off Sting with Sherry Martel to have it.
Oh no, but that's still the world title, Nate. That can't be the least prestigious. Didn't you have like the?
No, they don't count that.
They didn't count it.
No, I'd have 17. They don't count that.
But you were never like Western States Heritage Champion or anything like that, were you?
I might have been for 6 hours at night somewhere.
Well, what about the? Were you ever the Missouri State?
I won a lot of titles between 12 and 6 a.m.
I think you beat me for a couple of them. Now, were you ever a Missouri State champion? Because with Muchnick, was a really big deal in St. Louis. You never won that.
Yeah, yeah. That was
huge deal.
That was the only other belt in St. Louis allowed besides the NWA title. No, I never was. But now, all the guys that I wrestled, like when I wrestled Kerry was the Missouri State champion. I wrestled Ted DiBiase. Ted was. That was a very prestigious title in the business and in the history of our business.
Yeah, and when we get closer to the Royal Rumble, which is in St. Louis.
And by the way, we're going to be there.
Woo! Let's not give too much away. Let's kayfabe, please.
I can't wait for a live crowd to ask me some questions.
Yeah, I can't wait for that either. I want to talk about some of today's stars in the time we have left, Nate. And let's start with Toni Storm, because she's had a few matches involving your daughter, Charlotte, mm-hmm. including a singles match Friday on SmackDown. She's kind of new to the big time, But she's okay, isn't she? Those matches were all right.
Yeah, she's more than okay. She's really good.
What do you like about her?
Well, I like her look. And I, you know, I've done a little homework on her. I think that she pretty caught the attention of a lot of people at that all-women's pay-per-view in 2017, if I'm not mistaken.
Right. I think you're right.
And she's got that good look, and she's athletic, and, you know, she carries herself very professionally. I like her a lot.
Yeah, I agree with the last part you said the most. You look at her, and she looks like she belongs. She carries herself.
Absolutely.
She walks the walk. She's a little green on promos, but you can tell she'll get better.
Once again, that's attributed to lack of time and lack of experience and not having wrestled. It takes a lot of time and a lot of practice, and it takes multiple matches with different people to raise the level of skills. But for the time she's been in the business, when I see her now, I think she fits in. I think she's going to be a big star for the company for years to come.
I agree. Now that begs the question, is it harder or easier for girls coming up, women I should say, in wrestling, as opposed to the men? It seems like there might be more opportunity for the women if you can find a way to make yourself stand out.
That's a good question. I have to be honest with you, going right down, it's hard for either one. Does it make sense?
Well, yeah, I look at AEW where I think I love Britt Baker. I think the Doc's one of the top women performers in wrestling right now, you know, in the top three, in my opinion, easily. But I don't know what they have past her. And I think if any one of the women at the next level can find a way again to make herself stand out, she could slot in as a solid number two for months and years to come.
I'm not sure. I'd have to look at that more carefully.
I know what you mean. It's tough because
you know what
I've called Britt Baker Fabulous Moolah.
Yeah.
Because she's there. I don't want to say by herself, but they need to find a consistent number two, number three that she can have meaningful dialogue with. And I'm not so sure there's anybody there. A lot of people like Thunder Rosa. I'm not as sold on her as some. I don't know. That's kind of a work in progress. Now, when you were a top guy, having a match with somebody who was, I don't want to say Toni Storm's green, but she's less experienced than your daughter, certainly.
Mm-hmm.
When you were a top guy having a match with an up-and-comer who had potential but was less experienced, how did you approach that? What did you tell him? How much did you take over? How much did you give him?
Well, I gave as much as I gave him. First of all, I told him to just listen to me, which is nothing that's allowed now. And I said, let's hear the crowd. Let's see where we're going. And I gave him as much as they could possibly take. Because I like selling. I like feeding the guy. If the guy had the ability, it's like, I'll give you an example of a guy that never has gotten his due for how good he was. But I had great matches with him. Brad Armstrong.
Yep, no question.
So let's say that she is Brad Armstrong, right? And I'm Charlotte. It's a question of listening, taking your time, feeling comfort, getting to know each other. And I'm sure she's very confident when she goes to the ring that she knows that she's under not only the wing, but the experience and the knowledge, you know, of the woman I consider to be the greatest female wrestler of all time.
No question, she is.
And I'll bet you $1,000 if she has worked with her two or three times or five times on the road, it'll either be her or Sasha. You know what I mean?
I think Toni Storm, given experience in the ring with women like your daughter and Sasha, I think is really going to blossom. But you need to get that. You need to get it on the road. You need to get it in house shows. Yeah, and there aren't any house shows.
Natty Neiher can teach her a lot. I mean, there are just some people out there that you can learn from faster than others. And I think between Charlotte and Sasha and Natty Neiher and who am I leaving out of there? I mean, it's just there's only a few people that really are good enough to cheat you while you're working live on TV.
Well, Natty heard how complimentary we were of her on last week's podcast, and reacted on Twitter, but very much deserved. I can't say enough good about Natty Neidhart. And
no, and she, and like I said, she's a great teacher as well.
Now, let's move on to Cody Rhodes, who just won the TNT Championship from Sammy Guevara in AEW. When did you first meet Cody? Because I remember Cody being around WCW with his dad way back when.
No, I met Cody with I used to travel with Reed for amateur wrestling. And Cody was a Georgia state champion. But this is when they were both like younger. I think Cody is 3 years older or 2 years. They never wrestled each other. That's funny because I was dying for Cody and Reed to work back then, as were Dusty and I, but they were an age bracket apart. Where I couldn't even bump him up high enough. But I mean, Cody's just, he's a diamond man for me. I think the world of the kid. He's done all this on his own, you know, had the balls to step away from it, challenge it, married a beautiful girl, Brandy, who supports him. And they, you know, I talked to Michelle a lot. Not a lot, but once a month I'll text Michelle, man, the kid is golden. So, you know, it's kind of like, no, and I understand it, but I mean, I can't figure out how AEW got the Owen Hart Memorial Tournament I appreciate Tony for doing it, but that's something that if the company feels that strongly about Brett and Owen, that's something that I wish the WWE had jumped on. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but they didn't and weren't going to because of their relationship with Owen's family over the lawsuit.
I didn't know that. So that,
yeah.
Well, I'm proud of Tony for doing it because I never knew Owen that well, but he certainly is very respected by so many people. And I never got to know him. I never got to wrestle with him. So, but I think any time that they had the Dusty Rhodes Memorial, some kind of a tournament.
Team tournament, NXT.
At NXT, yeah. So,
right.
I mean, eventually one day I would bump that up to a main roster, a show, because Dusty's a character and a name that'll never be forgotten, always be remembered. And, there's not going to be another Dusty Rhodes.
Well, that said, I was always disappointed that Cody never got the opportunity I felt he deserved in WWE. And I didn't like him as Stardust.
That's why he left.
Well, I know. I didn't like him as Stardust. I liked him when he was in that legacy thing with Randy Orton and with Teddy DiBiase's kid. But yeah, I give him credit. Like you said, he went against the machine.
Yep.
You know, he left and created his own machine.
Yep.
And let's be honest, Tony Khan provides the money, and there were a lot of other influences like Kenny Omega and the Young Bucks. We could go down the list. But Cody Rhodes is the primary reason for AEW's existence. There's no doubt about that. He pushed the button first, pushed it hardest, and he got things done.
That's the way I understand it, yes. Because he was he had his own little promotion going, I think, before Tony came in. So,
well, yeah, he did that. He did that pay-per-view, that All In.
Yeah, and that's what I think it started Tony. And I don't know the intricacies of all that, but hey, I'm a big fan of Cody Rhodes. He knows that. I text him all the time. So,
well, I think the big thing for Cody was when he first left WWE, he went to Ring of Honor, mm-hmm. which now looks like it's going to be belly up or in a very, you know, limited capacity moving forward. But he went to Ring of Honor. And he used the creative freedom there to reinvent himself
mm-hmm.
and to help others reinvent themselves. And honestly, they picked up a lot of what Ring of Honor was doing with the Bucks, with Bullet Club, with Hangman Page, mm-hmm. and just moved it right over to AEW. And I don't fault Ring of Honor for letting those guys go. You know, what was going to happen was going to happen. But that's where it all started to happen. Cody Rhodes in Ring of Honor.
Yeah, I didn't see that. So I don't know how it evolved, but wherever it evolved and however it evolved, it worked. And Cody has once again put himself in a very special place.
Now, what do you like about Cody talent wise? What makes him, you know, a top performer?
Well, I tell you, when he did the moonsault off the cage with WWE, I looked at him in a whole different light. I didn't realize how athletic it was. He's one of these kids that can do anything. You know, just being so close to his dad to see those boys, both of them, be so successful. and even at different different ages and different time frames, every time you see a second generation kid do well, you can't be proud enough of them, especially if you're the son of the legendary Dusty Rhodes.
Well, in the match that Cody had with Dustin, remember that in AEW on pay-per-view,
yes.
Brother versus brother?
Yes.
That was phenomenal. And the way they did the angle leading up in the promos, it's one of the very few times brother versus brother worked. The only times that brother versus brother worked, to my mind, were Rhodes versus Rhodes and Hardy versus Hardy.
And Funk versus Funk.
Oh, that, Nate, that's even before my time, believe it or not.
I don't know if they did it. I'm making a joke, but
I'm not sure they did.
I don't think they did it, but that would have been classic. I totally agree. I saw all those matches, and I think, it just Cody and Dustin put on a clinic that night, and like I say, I'm so proud of both of them. It's very hard. You can imagine. Well, how hard it is to be a second generation wrestler when your last name is Rhodes and the pressure that's on you. And it's all the comparison. I happen to be experiencing, I've had to experience the heartache personally that my daughter went through because people just said she's Ric Flair's daughter, which is the biggest crock of shit in the world. She's the greatest because she's the greatest and surpassed me a long time ago. So.
NMLS number 65084, Equal Housing Lender. Whew. Christmas is finally behind us, but are you dreading those credit card bills headed your way? Well, here's a pro tip. Don't get stuck making minimum payments in the new year. SaveWithConrad.com can help you get rid of your credit card debt just like that. Oh, and we're going to get you the best deal on a mortgage you've ever had. But how's this for starters? No payments until March. You don't need money out of your pocket or perfect credit, so find out how much money you can save for free right now at SaveWithConrad.com.
Now, here's a prediction I'm going to make. I think I mentioned this on a previous podcast. I think the first guy to go from AEW to WWE will be Cody Rhodes. And I have no factual basis for that. I don't know his contract status. I just have that feeling. I don't know why. I just have that feeling. And I got to tell you, there are people in that locker room that have that feeling too.
It's possible. I know they'd take him back. I'm sure they would. Hey, the name Rhodes is going to be in this business until the day that the business drops off the face of this earth. And if they can bring Cody Rhodes back in, it would be a feather in their hat. It would that would speak volumes on Vince it would speak volumes for Vince to change his mind about something because he can keep a. He can have a frame of mind where he goes, I'm not going to go back there. I'm not doing this. I'm not going to revisit it. And then someone can tap on the shoulder and say, hey, it's Cody Rhodes. You know what I mean? So,
well, like I said, I'm not putting a timetable on it, but it would not surprise me. But I got to tell you, I don't know if I'd want to be the first guy to go from AEW to WWE because you're going to get a paycheck, but you might get buried too.
I think Cody's smart enough to decipher that. I think you got to make Cody's growing up 20 years in 5 years. In terms of smart logistics, knowing how to promote himself, he wouldn't walk in there blindsided.
Yep, I agree with that. And Nate, that's what makes your first run in WWE incredible. Because if anybody would figure to get buried upon entry in WWE, it'd be you. You were the standard bearer for the other guys for the competition. But instead, I mean, give Vince credit. He saw you for what you were and let you take it to the top there, too.
Mark, I say this very humbly. I was too good to be buried.
Oh, you don't have to tell me. I totally agree. But no,
Who was going to bury me?
You make a compelling argument.
I left the people behind me that could bury me.
Good point. You could have got buried any worse in the new place than you had been at the old place.
Are you kidding? I got to hang out with some of the greatest people. I got to wrestle Hogan. I got to wrestle Randy. I got to wrestle Bret Hart. I got to wrestle The Undertaker. Are you kidding me? It was the greatest year and a half, the most fun I ever had. And I made the biggest mistake I ever made was going back.
Now, before we wrap this up, I want to talk about somebody else from the WWE Women's Division, and that is Carmella. And I love Carmella.
No,
she has the old school WWE Women's look, like Sonny and Sable, but she's a real solid worker, too.
Let me just put right, Corey, you have so overachieved.
Oh, Corey Graves.
Corey, so overachieved.
You know, they live right down the road from me here in Pittsburgh.
Well, call him on. I hope he hears this. Hey, cut this piece out for me. Carmella is beautiful, and Corey Graves, you have overachieved. Woo!
Well, I got to tell you, I think she's fabulous. And
I do too.
Nate, with wrestling today for women, I don't think they have to look like Instagram models, but I don't think they should look ordinary either. Too many of the women in wrestling today look ordinary. And now we're seeing a little bit of a shift to the other direction.
Carmella is stunning.
Stunning. Tony Storm's very good looking too. I think we're seeing a move back in a different direction. Don't you? And that's good.
Yeah. Well, I have to look at them as if, you know, they're my daughters, but as a man, I'll tell you, they're both very attractive women.
Now, you see, in AEW, that's why I'd push Ty, Connie, and Anna Jay, because they look the part. Britt Baker looks the part. And I said before, I don't get Thunder Rosa. I do like Ruby Soho, though, because her look's different. That punk rock thing, at least it's something.
Yeah, well, I call it, you're talking about Ruby Riott, right?
Yeah, Ruby Soho now in AEW. I like her look. She gets the most out of it.
Yeah, I texted her when she was wrestling Ronda one time, and Ronda went, so started selling for her, and I texted her. I said, don't over walk away. Turn your back on someone like Ronda Rousey. You know, like I try to give her little tips about things, and she'll say, "God, anything you can tell me about wrestling." So I got to be on a regular texting basis with that when I saw her at the shows. But yeah, I'm happy she's healthy. I think the world of Ruby, and she's going to do real well over there. I'm happy that she landed on her feet with AEW, and she really deserves all the respect in the world. I love her.
No question. I couldn't agree more. Now, we talked about Tully Blanchard earlier. How come Tessa Blanchard, his daughter, can't get a look with the major promotion? Because I know she has a bad rep. She said some unfortunate things, but boy, I think her talent is overwhelming.
I've never seen her work.
Really?
No.
Oh, she's brilliant.
Yeah.
She'd be a great...
I keep hearing that, but I haven't seen her. So I've heard, obviously, it's not... You're not the only person to ever say how great she is. I just haven't seen her work.
Well, you see, I'd like to see her against...
I met her one time, and she's a lovely girl. Of course, I've known her forever from growing up, you know, but I've never seen her work.
Well, I'd like to see her against Ashley, against Charlotte, because I think physically she can compete with her, give that impression visually. I think the one thing about Ashley is she's such a great athlete and looks the part that, you know, but she's great at selling, so she gives her opponents that credibility. But it would be nice if more came in with that built in. Don't you agree?
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those marquee matches. I don't know the reasons. I don't know why she's not there. I've heard the same kind of stuff you have, but I mean, I take everything like that with a grain of salt, which you have to in this business because, you know, she could be the most lovely woman in the world. And people have some personal, you know, agenda against them. But no, I've heard she's really good, and I think it'd be great to see a Blanchard Flair match. Who wouldn't, right?
If
she's as good as they say she is.
Now, before we wrap this up, Nate, let's go off script a little bit. We've not talked enough about the NFL, although we did just a moment ago. See, you're rolling your eyes, and I don't blame you because
we're not going closing this down without talking about Michigan Friday, okay?
Oh, God, is that Friday already?
Yes, it's Friday. It's New Year's, Orange Bowl. I'm going.
Are you going?
You want to hear my Christmas text?
Go ahead.
From Jim
Harbaugh. Coach
Harbaugh.
Yeah, Coach Harbaugh. Yep, I do.
Okay, here you go. Who gets these kind of texts? Coach Harbaugh. I wished him a Merry Christmas. He wished me back. I went, woo! Likewise, and the privilege to get to entertain America next Friday. At this very moment, I have a voice screaming in my ear, Who has it better than us? Merry Christmas, Jim. Woo!
That sounds like
the voice screaming in his ear is me.
That sounds like him mimicking one of your promos.
No, listen, he's like me, he's an intellect.
Yeah. Well, I got to tell you, I still think...
I wanted to text John yesterday.
Ooh.
Oh, geez, ouch. I've left John alone.
I still think Michigan got screwed in the seedings. I think Michigan should be playing Cincinnati.
I do too, but here's the thing, Mark, about football every day. You got to beat everybody. You know what I'm saying? And eventually, I think they'll beat Georgia, and I think they're going to play Alabama.
Do you think the Steelers will win another game ever?
Boy, you know, because I like Ben Roethlisberger so well, I hope so. But I don't know. They're up and down.
I got to tell you, Nathan, I'm a big Ben fan.
Kansas City's back on fire. Without Kelsey, I thought you guys had a chance yesterday.
No, we had no chance. We stink. I mean, seven wins is so deceptive because we beat bad teams or we beat good teams having a bad day. But I'll tell you, and I say this with no small amount of regret because I'm a fan and a friend, but Ben stuck around too long, and a lot of them do, but he just can't get the ball there. He can't move in the pocket anymore. It's just, and so many do, except Brady. Brady will play till he's 60 and still be great.
Yeah, Brady had a 15-yard run yesterday in the first down. How about Aaron Rodgers, man? He's the dude.
How about Baker Mayfield with the four picks? Because they could have beat Green Bay. They could have beat Green Bay.
I believe that. I believe it. You saw the score.
It's just a weird year for football with COVID and so many guys missing and so many teams up and down. Who's your pick to win the whole thing right now?
Well, I think the best game of the whole playoffs will be the Bucs at Packers.
Who wins that?
That's the way the seedings are right now, unless something changes.
Who would win that? Who do you like?
Well, I like both quarterbacks so well. I know them both personally a little bit, but because I live in Tampa, I want Tampa to win, obviously.
Oh, no, I'm not talking about who you want. I mean, I think it's going to be tough to beat Green Bay at Green Bay.
I do, too. Aaron Rodgers is unbelievable. I can't say enough about him.
And in the American Football Conference, they all stink. I can't pick anybody except Kansas City. Kansas City's kind of cut themselves from the pack again.
Well, how about Joe Burrow? How about him yesterday?
Yeah, I think, you know what?
Can you imagine the Bengals after all these years of is it Mike Brown the owner?
Yeah, still the Browns,
He's finally got a team. God, if he'll just keep the organization moving forward, they can be back in it. I mean,
let me tell you something, and this goes for Green Bay and Tampa too. Green Bay and Tampa too. Kansas City too. No team has more weapons than Cincinnati.
No.
Joe Burrow, Joe Mixon, T. Higgins, Tyler Boyd, who's from Pittsburgh, Jamar Chase. They are loaded.
You sound like a sportscaster who knows something about sports now.
I try not to.
Let's do another podcast so we can ace the guys at ESPN. We're trying to figure out how to bury one day and bring in life the next day. Hey, how about Michael Wilbon and Stephen A. asking the question on that, whatever, one of that pregame show, if LeBron James, who just had his fifth 30-point game in a row, is still a top five player. Oh, my God.
Yeah, but boy, the Lakers aren't very good, are they?
I didn't say the Lakers, but that was not the question. I said, is LeBron James still a top five player? You got to be kidding me.
No, obviously, but the Lakers are bad. And you know what, Nate?
But that wasn't the statement. They are asking Michael Wilbon, what would he know about basketball?
Well, let me make a statement.
Okay.
The Lakers aren't very good. And part of that goes on LeBron because he was the de facto GM who brought in all those old guys.
Well, let's see. Okay. I'm going to stick to the original question that I heard on network TV.
I bet you are.
Yeah, no, because I don't know whether he brought in Carmelo or that.
I do.
And what's his name? Bringing in the other kid's not that old. The kid that didn't play well the other night is not that old.
Oh, Westbrook. Westbrook.
Yeah, Westbrook's not that old. The guy, here's the greatest line of all time. It was Charles Barkley calling Anthony Davis Street Clothes Davis. He never plays.
Barkley's the best.
Street Clothes Davis.
Nate, let's wrap it up on Street Clothes Davis. Good luck to your Michigan team. Some people may listen to this after they've already won, but I feel confident they'll win, so that's no big deal. And we'll do it again next week.
You like Michigan too?
Yes.
Oh, good. Good to hear that. Yes. Okay, we're on the same page.
I think it's going to be really tight. I think they're going to have to win it at the death. I think that game's going to be one score either way the entire 60 minutes.
Well, I'll be in a Hard Rock box at the Orange Bowl. Call me.
No, you know I will. That's Ric Flair. I am Mark Madden. This is Woo Nation Uncensored.
Hey, and by the way, Happy New Year, everybody.
Happy New Year.
Woo! Drinks on me.